This is Patriots Playbook.
The legend.
You're just telling me it's time to start.
Oh, okay. All right, well, fair enough.
I think the way that I've termed this in the past, Bailey has a little je ne sais quoi. He got a little something-something.
I actually don't like the offseason professionally.
Does anybody like the offseason?
Because we've had arguments, not arguments, but fun.
Trendsetters here.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, here's your host of Patriots Playbook, John Rook.
Trendsetters? Trendsetters. Okay. Well, I kind of like that. Do we want to be trending on X or something like that? Or, I mean, I don't know. Although Bill Belichick's been trending all day long on Twitter/X today. The entire day. And so I keep looking because whenever I get back on Twitter, and I'm going to call it Twitter. I don't care what Elon says. But every time I go on, I see sports trending. Bill Belichick. I'm like, God, did they fire him yet? And by the way, and welcome into the playbook. This is Jets Week. And I realize it's a little strange. It's just weird. It doesn't feel like it, does it? I mean, we're in the last week of the season. This is a we're in the never never world, never never land or whatever you want to call it, because we just don't know which way to go. It's almost like we're stuck in neutral, and we haven't been given the shove in the right direction yet. Kind of like the old 62 Chevy 2 that I had back when I was a kid growing up. It was one of those three speeds with a stick on the transmission on the drive shaft, right? It wasn't four on the floor. It was a stick on the drive shaft. Do you ever drive one of those cars? Never had one of those three speeds, right? Okay, so that's what I learned to drive on, right? And the car constantly stalled out because I couldn't downshift in time. Whenever I needed to downshift, I'm up in third speed or whatever, because I'm driving, 45 or 50 miles an hour plus on the road. And then, whenever I would come to a stop sign, I'd have to hit the clutch, downshift, so I could start again. And, of course, I would hit the clutch, and then I would forget to downshift again. And, of course, then the engine would just like that, and I wouldn't go anywhere. And I feel like that's where we are right now. Thank you. Yeah, I thought that was a pretty good analogy, too. I just came up with that, too, by the way. But that's really kind of where we are. That's all. By the way, Evan is over the locker room, if you're wondering about Evan, because they moved practice time or they moved interview time to 2 o'clock today. And God only knows why, because nobody gives a crap anyway. But, hey, that's okay, fine. So they moved interviews to 2 o'clock. That's Evan's job as, the quote-unquote beat reporter for Patriots.com. So Evan's gone to the locker room. Evan will join us next week. We will have, by the way, I'll go ahead and mention this, but even though this is the final game of the regular season this Wednesday and there won't on this weekend, and then there won't be any playoffs thereafter, which is one of the few times that, we've actually had to say that over the 22-year history of this program, we will do a wrap-up show next week. Now, I know PU is going to, they're vacating the Wednesday time slot. Is that right? Okay, after this week. So I'm going to step into that time slot next Wednesday at 12 noon, because the next four Wednesdays in a row, starting today, because I got a game tonight, but the next four Wednesdays in a row, I've got college basketball. So if we're going to keep it to the Wednesday, and I try to do that just for practical purposes, I'll be traveling each of the next three Wednesdays. So we'll do the show remotely, but we're going to do the show next Wednesday. So there you go. We'll just do it from noon to 2. And, we'll update everybody on social media on that one anyway. But we will do a season wrap-up show next Wednesday because, frankly, next Wednesday we might also have something to talk about, and we might not have something additional to talk about. And that's really kind of where I am today, because every time I, open up a website and I see Bill Belichick trending on X, or every time I open up, a newspaper on a website, of course, or I'm reading something of interest, it's something about Belichick and the Patriots and, we're not moving forward here. We're on to the Jets. We're worried about the Jets this week, which is what he said. And I don't think we can really expect him to say anything more than that. That's the way he's always been, and it's the way he's always going to be. And in all honesty, I just, we were just talking about this a short while ago, and I think Marine actually came up with a pretty good thought that no one has entered into the equation just yet. It's a pretty good, I think, little, I don't know, conspiracy theory. Do you want to call it a conspiracy theory? I guess we could potentially do that. You know, because I think it stands to reason that because of everything that's gone on, the way this season has progressed, if the Patriots lose, 4-13 isn't going to set well with anybody. And even if they win, 5-12 is still the worst record that they've had in 23 years. So I'm kind of wondering, you would think that just because of everything that's hanging over our heads and all the questions that get asked of the media or the media ask of Bill, you know, have you thought any more about your future, Bill? And we're on to the Jets. Okay, that's fine. But you got to ask the question. Doesn't it stand reason that getting this done sooner rather than later is in the best benefit of in everyone's best interest? In other words, you know, as soon as the gun sounds on Sunday, when the game is over, one way or the other, shouldn't somebody say or do something, or shouldn't we know that there's a meeting between, you know, football ops and ownership and on which direction we're going to go here? Doesn't it stand to reason that if a decision's already been made that it will be announced quickly? And here's two reasons why I don't think that's going to happen. Okay? And this is why I'm asking you guys to kind of open up the show today. I'm asking you, in all honesty, do you believe this is the end of an era in New England football, in New England professional sports? Forget the Patriots, but yeah, is this the end of an era? Because you've had a championship coach here for a number of years. You can make an argument that the Patriots elevated the entire region of New England with that, you know, first championship back in Super Bowl 36. Clearly they won before the Red Sox ever won one. You know, the Celtics, I know, and even the Bruins, if you're going to go back to the 1970s, they won championships. But I would argue that professionally speaking, New England was nothing more than just sort of a passing regional phenomenon, a regional sort of fancy to other people around the country. You know, to those, for instance, you know, a lot of you know I grew up in Texas, right? You know, I grew up a fan of the Dallas Cowboys because that's just where I grew up. And remember thinking back in the day, New England, right? That's the Bruins, right? And then maybe the Red Sox, right? Oh, and yeah, and the Celtics. They have Bill Russell and Larry Bird and, you know, okay. So, but it was an afterthought. And then after Super Bowl 36, it changed. New England's perception changed. And those of you who are living outside of New England, please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm okay with that. I'm a big boy. I don't mind being wrong if you think I'm wrong. But I'm telling you, someone who came from outside of this region and who now has lived in New England for more than half of his life, that's me. Something changed when the Patriots won a Super Bowl. And maybe it's because that was about the time that we really started seeing the National Football League become our primary sport, become our go-to sport, become our you know, football, hot dog, apple pie, and Chevrolet sport, you know, just like the commercial there. Baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and I shouldn't say Chevrolet, even though I just did. They're not a sponsor. Toyota. Okay, let's put Toyota in there. Do you understand where I'm coming from? Maybe a little bit. The Patriots really put the stamp of New England professional sports on the map. Hockey is just sort of a regional thing. Like I said, basketball, okay, a little bit. But the Celtics were largely hated for years because they always won back in the day, you know, when Russell and Heinsohn and Cousy and, you know, because they won all the time. I remember when I worked for the San Antonio Spurs years ago. For those that don't know, I did once upon a time back in the 1980s. And whenever the Celtics would play the Spurs, you know, we played them twice a year, East Conference versus Western Conference, right? You played them one time at home, you played them one time away. That's the way the old, you know, NBA schedule worked. And whenever the Celtics came in, it was, you know, like, hate the Celtics, hate the Celtics. You only play them once a year, but, oh, hate the Celtics. Why? Well, because they always win. And the Spurs were a winning team back then. I'm telling you, it's the mindset. It's the different way of thinking it from a different part of the country. And the Patriots winning in Super Bowl 36 changed everything forever. So we're embarking upon, one way or another, a new era. And maybe this new era includes Bill Belichick for the first year or two. I don't know. The original premise here is my thought process here is that if this doesn't happen in the first 24 to 48 hours, it ain't gonna happen after the season is over. That's my thought. Now, you know, rip me a new one next week if on the show is perfectly long. You rip me one now if you're like disgusted by that thought. I don't think it'll happen unless it happens in the first 24 to 48 hours. Number one, I just think it makes sense that if you've already made a decision, yeah, it's kind of like ripping off the Band-Aid and letting the scab start to heal. So if he makes it by the first day or two, it tells me two things. Number one, they've pretty much already decided he's still going to be around as coach. Maybe they've already made a decision. We don't know this, okay? We don't know this. And number two, Marine, I got to give you full credit for this one, okay? Can you imagine having Tom Brady's ceremony in June without Bill Belichick as the head coach? Right? Think about that for a second. What are we going to do? Are we going to fire him and then invite him back and just say, oh, our bad, Bill? Really, think about this. Brady's coming back for the thing that we're going to open up the entire stadium for, likely, right? I don't think anything's been decided, has it? I don't think it's been decided. It's above our pay grade here. But I can foresee them opening up the entire stadium and selling out 60,000 people for Tom Brady's, Hall of Fame induction. I can see that. And we're going to do it without Bill? No. No, we're not going to do that without Bill. It's not going to happen. So if you're going to keep Bill around through then, what do you do about the franchise? What do you do about the future of the team? What do you do about next year? I'm just saying. I honestly, the more I think about it, and nobody in the media here, brilliant geniuses that they are here in the New England and Boston area, but nobody in the media here has brought that up. No one except Marine. Okay? Hoorah. That's a good job.
Outside the box.
Yeah. Well, that's way outside the box, brother. But you know what? You laid that one on me when I walked in the door in the studio just a little while ago. And you totally and completely flummoxed me with it. You flummoxed me and flabbergasted me. Because I'm like, holy crap, he's right. He's 100% right. Now, maybe they do pull the trigger. Maybe they decide to bring in another coach. Because honestly, we're making a change here. I still slightly favor Mike Vrabel, and I'll tell you why. Number one, we find out this week, and I guess I was just unaware. I suppose, it was knowledge in Tennessee, but you find out this week that he's in the last year of his contract with the Titans. So he could be a free agent once the season's over. And the Patriots would not have to make a trade or do anything to get him in. Number two, you remember when we had his Hall of Fame ceremony here a couple of months ago? And at halftime of the game, and he was like, all right, well, we need to move it along here so we can get back to the game. You know, we got a game to play here is the words that he actually used. And I was thinking, and he said it at the time, and I think I wrote about this, but I'm like, who the hell is we? Mike Vrabel said that, by the way. We got a game to play here. Who is we, Mike? Cue the Twilight Zone music. Yeah, right? right? Come on! Anybody else buying that one? I've given you two reasons, two huge reasons now, why I don't think Bill gets axed next week. I don't think it happens. Now, maybe that delights you. Maybe that, you're fine with it because, with all due respect, he's still going to go down as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, NFL coach of all time. One of the greatest coaches, period, of all time. Maybe you don't like the way that he's, handled things the last few years. And you know what? You wouldn't be wrong. You wouldn't be wrong. But we're not privy to any of this just because, in all honesty, he plays his cards closer to the vest than even the best poker players in the world. This is liable to have been discussed already. It's to some extent, to some level. Think about it. The Crafts are not dumb. They're extraordinarily smart, bright, intelligent, forward-thinking people. Remember, we were the first NFL franchise to have a website. Remember, we were the first NFL franchise to have live radio programming on the website. How many times have we said that here? Many times. Okay? So these are forward-thinking people here. They know what you're talking about. They know how you feel. They know something needs to happen. They know something needs to change. It can't be the same way that it was. And it could very well be that, you know, there's an announcement by the early part of next week or mid-next week or whenever that, you know, hey, we've decided, you know, we're going to move in separate directions. I can see that. I can definitely see that. I'm still thinking it's unlikely, but I could see it because I don't think Bill's done coaching. And if Bill's not done coaching, then how awkward is it going to be to invite him back for Brady's thing in June? Well, it's like, you know, that's off the charts awkward. Awkward. I just, you know, that's why this is good. This is why we need to discuss this stuff. So I'm interested in your opinions right now. Phone lines are open. 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500. Or you can hit me up with the email webradio@patriots.com. You can also hit my Twitter account, my X account, x.com, whatever the hell it is. It's at JR Broadcaster. I'd be curious to know, number one, is this the end of an era? Number two, what's your own conspiracy theory? Do you share one that you've heard? Do you believe one that you've heard? Do you have your own that we haven't even talked about yet? I believed, you know, and I heard the question at the end of PU today where an emailer had asked, when did you know the season was over? And I kind of thought the season was over once the calendar turned to October. And then especially, you know, when Christian Gonzalez, you know, left, I just kind of thought, well, I think we're going to have to start thinking about next year. I didn't really think that the playoffs were a possibility, even though mathematically, numerically speaking, you know, yeah, maybe. But my guess was early October. And so since that point in time, it's kind of like, all right, we're kind of treading water around here. But at the same time, hey, we're on to whomever, like we always are around here. We've been conditioned, I think, for that over the last several years. And I think that it's quite probable that this organization has been dealing in that realm as well. That even though, well, we know, you know, we're not going anywhere, we are going to start paying attention to the future, but we're just not going to do it in front of you. I feel pretty confident with that one, to be honest with you. Now, maybe I'm reading the tea leaves wrong, but based on reading between the lines, which is something that I, you know, look, I love a good conspiracy, okay? I'm one of those that doesn't believe that, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald was the, you know, sole, you know, assassin of JFK. I believe that. I believe that with all my heart. So I love a good conspiracy. And Marine just fed into it today. So this is good stuff for me. I like this. This is neat. Okay? Neato. And the reason is because I'm open to possibilities. I don't like things that are cut and dried. Maybe there's a little bit of assurance to you when things are cut and dried, but I'm not sure that I go for that. See, I think good conspiracy is kind of like, you know, putting a little cayenne pepper on your chili, you know? You need a little spice. And I kind of feel like this is one of those opportunities. And I've thought more and more, even though everybody assumes, and especially, God love them, the New England media that covers, you know, the Patriots. You know, Mike Reese is one of them, you know, and I respect Mike immensely. You know, Chris Price from the Globe, Ben Volen from the Globe, you know, Andrew Callahan from the Herald, you know, Mark Daniels from Mass Live, Karen Garrigan from Mass Live, Mike Cadlick, who's coming on from WEEI.com just a little bit as well. You know, Andy Hart, all these guys who are part of the media, okay? And I respect the work that they do because it's hard covering the beat every day, especially when you know that, you know, the stuff that you're covering is going to be the same old, and yet if you miss it and something does happen, it could cost you your job. So that's not an easy thing to do. Not an easy thing to overcome. Those of you that, you know, understand a little bit what beat reporting is all about, hey, this is what you live with. Doug Kide from the Herald as well. Doug's been a part of the show in the past. He gets it. They all get it. They all get it to an extent. So everyone seems to think that it's a fait accompli, that the Patriots cannot go any further status quo. And I technically would agree with that. What we don't know is whether or not Bill is going to accept help in terms of his, you know, general manager, you know, talent search, you know, scouting duties. I saw on social media, forgive me if I'm not correcting the right person. I saw on social media, and I want to say it was ESPN, but I don't know, where Bill has not re-signed a draft pick, an original Patriot draft pick. He has not re-signed them beyond their rookie deal since 2013. Is that right? I guess I just hadn't done the research on that one. But I had a friend of mine sent me a note on that one, that Bill has not re-signed a rookie beyond his rookie contract. He hasn't re-signed anybody to a second contract since 2013. And if that's the case, well, then clearly there is an egregious issue here in New England. This is a large reason why we've seen the franchise fortunes head down the disposal over the course of the last few years, because there's been a huge talent drain here. And what talent has been in here hasn't been deemed good enough to be re-signed. And so this is all we're seeing now, is the byproduct of mistake after mistake after mistake. So something clearly has to change. Something clearly has to fix itself. But do you fix itself? Do you here's another analogy for you. Do you throw the baby out with the bathwater? I don't think necessarily so. In this case, do you throw the coach out, even though he can still coach? Is the coach willing to accept assistance, accept a role? How does Bill feel about that anyway? Is it kind of like, well, it's my way or the highway? Or does he realize that, hey, you know, things have gone south here in New England over the last few years. I don't like that. And before I step aside, before I retire, before I move on, I want to help fix the issue. Is there that kind of an understanding between Coach Belichick and the Kraft family? We don't really know. I would tend to think that there would be. Because if they're really as close as they say that they've been in terms of working together, and the Krafts have long, you know, told me, you know, hey, Bill does his thing. We let Bill do his thing, even though we know the Krafts do have suggestions. And, you know, hey, that might have happened last year, you know, when they, you know, said, you know, hey, Matt Patricia's got to go. We got to bring in a legit offensive coordinator. I mean, I would suggest that, you know, and maybe, you know, Bill's not stupid either. Maybe he's like, yeah, we need a boost here. We need some help. It didn't work out. How many times have you done something that you thought in your right mind it was a good idea and it just didn't work out? Are you backpedaling? Are you excusing yourself? You're like, oh, well, I didn't know that. Are you making an excuse? Or are you just accepting it and you're learning from it and you're moving on? And so I'm of the opinion that Bill, and again, knowing him as I know him, and heck, you know, the guys at PU, they know him as well, if not better than I do. I've been here for 22 years, so I know him in the, you know, since a head coach, but do we have daily interactions? No. Hey, coach, how's it going? Hey, that's it. Those are our interactions. I'll introduce him at a press conference or at a charitable function or whatever, and he'll shake my hand, and he'll say, thanks, John. And then, you know, so, oh, he knows my name at least, so that's good. But I'm of the opinion that Bill is not as stuffed shirt, overbearing as you may think he is. It's just my impression. And I'm not a member of his PR staff here either. I'm not. I'm not here saying this because I love Bill or I want Bill to stay or, you know, no, this is just based on my observations here. And I'm not giving anybody any state secrets. Just pure, unadulterated observation from someone who does not really have, a stake in the game. I mean, that's just, that's just kind of where I am with this. So I would tell you that, you know, what you've heard from other players, what you've heard from veterans who are not only here, but especially those who have left the team, who are a part of the dynastic run of 6 Super Bowls. In fact, there's a recent quote from Rob Gronkowski I saw on social media that said, Coach Bill Belichick is definitely my number one coach on my list. He's not just top 5. He's number one on my list of the best coaches I've ever had in my career. That was from Gronk. And I think most players who have played, especially a number of years under Coach Bill, feel that way. And I believe that ownership feels that way. And I've sensed over the last couple of weeks, more and more people feel that way. Like, you know, we could be giving up, you know, the best coach who ever walked the planet. Does that mean there aren't other good coaches out there? Of course not. There are a bunch of really good coaches out there. Please not Jim Harbaugh. Please not Jim Harbaugh. Please not Jim Harbaugh. Oh, I say that just a joke. Again, my personal thought is that, you know, Vrabel would be an excellent candidate. And that has nothing to do with Gerard Mayo. And by the way, for those that didn't see it, there was a Boston Sports Journal report this week that says Gerard was, rubbing people the wrong way in the organization. Did you guys talk about that at all during PU?
We didn't talk about it today, but Gerard, Greg Bedard was on 98.5 defending it.
Yeah, defending it, right? Well, look, I give Greg a lot of credit, okay? Greg's been a part of this show before. You know, we bring him in as a Patriots insider quite frequently on this show. And Greg's business is like that of other beat writers, that it pays for him to have good source and inside information, because especially for Greg, the more accurate his thoughts are, the more people are going to subscribe to his journal. And that's what he's in the business of doing, selling subscriptions. So if he's constantly lying, or if he's constantly getting it wrong, are you going to buy his publication? No. No. You're not going to do that. Why would you waste the money if the guy's going to feed you a bunch of bull that doesn't come true? You want to align yourself, whether it's your belief or not, you still want to align yourself with guys who are consistently correct. So he's arguing that point. He's fighting that point. He's trying to, you know, back that point up. And I would tell you that in all honesty, if you're not rubbing somebody the wrong way, then you're not leading. Because when leaders come in and leaders take over and leaders, you know, try to put their best foot forward, you are going to rub somebody's nose in it. That's just the way it works. And so for a guy like Mayo to come in and sort of, you know, run the show and show that he's capable of being a head coach, yeah, he's probably going to upset somebody along the way. Now, I don't know if he'll be the next coach or not. I have no idea. Nobody knows that around here. But I just thought that was a rather sort of poignant observation, that if somebody in this organization was rubbed the wrong way because of some of the things that he's done this year, I'm like, well, good. Because, frankly, this organization needs that right now, don't they? Status quo is what we don't want around here, right? I think that's important. So I think that's just another kind of fly in the ointment that we can put in around here. And again, my question to you is do you believe this is the end of an era? And which scenario do you think plays out? Let's see who's accurate with this one. And then we can you know, tally up the score next week or the week after, whenever it happens. And I'm thinking more and more, like I said at the beginning of this, I'm thinking more and more that it's not going to happen. Just my thoughts, just my observations. 855-PATS-500, the toll-free number, 855-PATS-500, web radio at patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster. on Twitter. Okay, Rich Cimini, who covers the New York Jets for ESPN and ESPN.com, is their ESPN Nation reporter. He's the Jets equivalent to Mike Reese, of course, for those that follow along. Kind enough to join us here in the playbook. Hey, Rich, John Rook here in Foxborough. How's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me. I can only hope to be as good as Mike Reese at my job.
I think you guys do a magnificent job. And part of that is because I'm trying to explain, you know, really the duty of a beat reporter. And the duty of a beat reporter is 24/7, 365. You don't go just during, you know, football season. It's long gone past that since, you know, we've had this digital age of the internet and things along those lines. You guys have some of the toughest jobs, I think, in covering teams in sports because, you know, you want to be up to date. You want to justify your job with, you know, a network like ESPN, and you also don't want to get beat by the competition.
Yeah, everything you said is true, and Mike – And all the Patriots beat writers are probably going to go through something that we go through here in New York every 3 or 4 years, which is a coaching search. You know, so I've teased Mike about that. I mean, it's like you never have to worry about that.
Right.
24 years of the same guy.
Right.
And like you said before I came on, no one knows for sure what's going to happen. But, you know, chances are they might be moving in a different direction. And so, you know, I could speak for having gone through
absolutely
time.
Yeah, and
it's not a fun thing to cover.
Right, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, Rich. I mean, I think we realize we got a football game to play on Sunday, and, you know, we'll touch on that at least briefly here. But, you know, looking at it from that point of view, I do think that something's going to happen. But of late, I've thought more and more that I believe that, you know, while something may happen, I still think Bill may be here as the head coach. Do you see that as a plausible scenario?
Well, you hear things, you know, in recent days I've heard that could be more of a plausible scenario, but I am not well connected with the Patriots at all. I'm hearing things second and third hand.
Sure. I understand that. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I'm just kind of curious, you know, from the outside, what you hear, what you observe, and you know, based on your knowledge, especially since you said, you know, the Jets have gone through this several times over the last few years, how hard is the tug to change when you know change needs to happen?
Well, I mean, New England's in a very unique situation. I mean, they got arguably the greatest coach in history. The wall is filled with Super Bowl trophies, and when the Jets change coaches, it's because they're coming off, you know, multiple losing years in a row. And usually the coach loses the locker room or the team stops playing. And so they make it, you know, it's time for a change. You know, we've seen that, like I said, you know, happened for 2 years for Adam Gase. Todd Bowles was 4 years. Rex Ryan got six, which is an eternity in Jet years. So, you know, here they churn it or, you know, they cycle through them pretty quickly. There it's such a unique situation. And I'm sure however it happens, if he does end up leaving, I think it'll be – something that is mutual. I don't think they're just going to outright fire a Bill Belichick. I think it'll be something where both sides will, you know, make it mutual and give him the off that he deserves.
Yeah, and I also think that that's the way that you can get out of this. The Patriots get a little what they want. Bill gets what he wants. Everybody wins as long as they find a meeting of the minds. And like I mentioned earlier before you joined us, my thought is that if they've already kind of made up their minds on this, it'll probably happen sooner rather than later once the season is over, you know, Sunday afternoon at a little past, you know, 4 o'clock. The longer that it lasts, the more status quo you're probably going to find it'll be.
Yeah, to me, the interesting thing is, you know, is whether they'll trade him. You know, that's how he got there, right? You know,
right.
Back in 2000, the Jets traded him for a first-round pick, you know, probably – one of the greatest, if not the greatest trade in NFL history was Robert Kraft trading for Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, will they try to trade him to get some compensation in return? That's a question that's really foremost in my mind, just as a casual observer from the outside. I would think they would do what Bill wants. I mean, if there is an opportunity out there, a team that really wants him, I think the Patriots would try to do something like that. But I don't think they're going to hold him up or try to do something that would prevent Belichick from seeking another job elsewhere.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we're, you know, we're sort of at a loggerhead here on that one, just because I think out of respect for Bill, they wouldn't hold him up. But at the same time, you have to look out for the best interest of the team, the organization, the franchise. And let's face it, Patriots didn't build this into a $7 billion, you know, worth franchise, you know, for being stupid businessmen.
No, they didn't, but they let Tom Brady go for nothing.
So, you know, yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, they shortened his contract by a year. They'll let him escape. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah. All right, so let's then let's kind of flip this over to Florham Park, New Jersey then for a moment at any rate. And while we know that, you know, the Jets are going to finish ahead of the Patriots, Patriots are going to finish last in the division for the first time in more than 20 years, the Jets, I don't think, in anybody's right mind, especially Jets fans, didn't take the steps forward that they felt like they needed to take this year. Does that come back to Robert Saleh at this point in time? And would they consider, if the right man is there, would they consider another coaching change?
No, he's going to be the coach next year. The owner came out a couple of weeks ago and made that pretty clear, that they're going to stick with Robert Saleh and general manager Joe Douglas. And so the Saleh will get a fourth year. This is one of the most disappointing seasons ever for the Jets, because there was such high expectations coming into the year. But I think everyone will, they'll get a mulligan, because Rodgers went down on the fourth play of the season, which is just the ultimate doomsday scenario, I guess, sort of like the most Jets thing ever, you know, was losing their, you know, future Hall of Fame quarterback on the fourth play of the year. And they never recovered. I mean, their offense was historically bad this year, and I think they have to take a hard look at what they're doing on offense. But from all indications, Nathaniel Hackett, their OC, will be back as well. So basically, Woody Johnson, the owner, is just saying mulligans for everybody.
Yeah. Okay. And I do remember, you know, seeing that. And so I'm just wondering, though, if public sentiment swings one way or another, in light of all of this. And let's say the Patriots win this game, and they make it, what is it now? Would it be 16 in a row for the Jets? Maybe does that light a fire under somebody, you know, again, you know, at Jets HQ? Or, again, do they get the complete mulligan here because of Aaron Rodgers' situation?
Yeah, I don't think anything would change. I mean, it would be the owner comes out and says, I want these guys back, and then 3 weeks later he changes his mind. I mean, I guess anything's possible in the NFL.
Owners have done that before, you know. So
yeah, I guess anything's possible in the NFL. But yeah, that would stun me. I think I think they deserve another chance. I think they are so far down the road into Rodgers. And Rodgers, let's be honest, Rodgers is calling a lot of the shots.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And he believes in this leadership team that the Jets have, and he wants them back. But and so they'll be back. And so they don't want to upset their 40-year-old franchise quarterback. So they're back.
I was just going to say, so is it fair that he's calling the shots now with basically 1 year left to give?
Well, he's saying two. He wants to play at least two more years. Yeah, to me, it's a bad optic. I mean, when you have a player come in and is basically making these decisions and throwing his influence around, it's certainly a bad optic. Certainly Rodgers is doing this for selfish reasons, because, I mean, he loves Nathaniel Hackett as his OC. I mean, that they're really, really close friends. And at the age of 40, Rodgers doesn't want to have to get to know a new coordinator and learn a new playbook. That's the last thing he wants to do at age 40.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so he's got his own agenda. But I think the Jets are so far down the road, like I said, that for them to, like, fire everyone and start over, I think you're minimizing what Rodgers can do, because he was brought here to run his offense. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to bring in a new coordinator to install a different offense? To me, that's counterproductive. So, it's not a great situation that they're in. But they made this bed, and they're going to have to lie in it.
Okay, fair enough. And actually, I think that's very believable. What do the Jets do about Zach Wilson? Is he, you know, I mean, you got under his contract under control here, but do you think about drafting another quarterback to come in and learn under Rodgers and, you know, send Zach Wilson off to the scrap heap? I'm just kind of curious what you think might happen there.
Yeah, well, you know that he's not playing this week, so essentially, you know, his season is over. He's still in the concussion protocol. I think we've seen the last of Zach Wilson in a Jet uniform. I think they'll trade him for a late-round draft pick. I do not believe they will draft a quarterback with their first-round pick, which will probably be somewhere in the 7 to 10 range. I'd be shocked if they drafted a quarterback. They're in a win-now mode. However, I think they could draft a quarterback on the second or third day of the draft, probably the third day, and bring him in as a third stringer and then go out and get a veteran backup for next year. Today, Robert Saleh was asked about Zach Wilson's future, and he was very noncommittal, which is unusual when a guy's got a contract for next year. So, I think Zach Wilson's days here are done, and I think they'll have a new veteran backup next season.
You also had a little bit of a change and I guess a major disappointment at running back by letting a guy go this week that, you know, clearly I think the Patriots also had some interest in at the beginning of the year. And I know that that was just another disappointment right on top of, the whole quarterback thing after the season, you know, got started. What do we make of that experiment overall in terms of bringing a guy in and expectations maybe being a little bit too high?
Two words: complete bust.
Wow.
So they brought him in. The Jets thought they were a Super Bowl team, and they thought they were maybe one piece away back in August. And Rodgers really liked the idea of bringing Dalvin Cook in. If you recall that Breece Hall was coming off ACL surgery from last fall, and there was some question about how effective he would be early in the year. So they went out and got a $7 million insurance policy in Dalvin Cook. And the good news is that Breece Hall turned out to be further ahead of schedule than people thought. So they didn't really need Dalvin Cook. But Dalvin Cook just didn't get on the field that much. He did not look like the old Dalvin Cook, and he was a declining running back when the Jets made the decision to sign him, and he continued to look like a declining running back as the year went along. And so finally, basically, Cook just asked to be released so he could try to catch on with another team, a playoff team, and then they just cut him loose. And I suspect he'll sign on someone's practice squad and maybe get a shot in the postseason.
Yeah, to be determined. I think he's got to clear waivers through today, correct?
Yeah, I don't think anyone will claim him on waivers.
Yeah, I'd be a little surprised on that as well. All right, so if I'm a Jets fan, and let's just say for argument's sake here, I am a Jets fan, what can I be encouraged about offensively, especially trying to create some positive momentum for next season, starting with this weekend's game against New England?
Well, they have two really good skill position players in Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson. I mean, I think those two guys could be among, or actually probably already among the best at their positions. Wilson went over 1,000 2 years in a row. Breece Hall is going to finish up with probably around 1,500 yards from scrimmage and came back real strong from the ACL. So you got two really good building blocks there, and they're just going to have to do a wholesale revamping of their offensive line. That is the weakest unit on the team. They've invested a lot of resources in that line over the last few years, none of which have really come to fruition. And I don't want to say they're starting from scratch. They have maybe two starters that are back next year, but the rest of the line has to be repaired. It's just a major project for the offseason.
All right, so we're going to work on the offensive line, which the Patriots also have to do. And if you're looking at something that, could give you reason for optimism beyond that, it certainly looks to me like, defensively, the Jets have some talent. Some of it's banged up, but I think there's a lot to like about that Jet defense. Is that enough going forward?
Yeah, they have a good defense. I mean, you couldn't tell from last Thursday night's game against Cleveland. They were horrible in the first half. But they are, I think they're seventh in yards allowed, and I think they're 18th in points allowed, which is a lot lower than expected. They still see themselves as a really good defense. And they have 9 of 11 starters under contract for next year, and all their best players are coming back, like Quinnen Williams and C.J. Mosley and Sauce Gardner, D.J. Reed. They're all under contract. They probably need another defensive tackle, a run stuffer, and they could probably use a safety. But all things considered, they're in really good shape on the defensive side. And I think they just got worn down toward the end of the year, just getting no support from the offense, I think eventually took its toll on the defense. But I think coming back fresh next year, I think they'll have a top 10 defense next year.
Okay, it sounds to me like they're certainly on their way, because there's been a lot of excellent quickness as well as strength on the defensive front. They've done a pretty good job in the trenches overall. They've done a lot of what New England's defense has done. They've also managed to keep their team in games regardless of whatever ineptitude's been at quarterback and on the offensive side. So clearly somebody there knows. Defense is something that we can hang our hat on right now. And I wonder if there isn't more similarity between New York and New England than people really give the two sides credit for, just because of the way these two teams are built.
Well, the defensive-minded teams, both, I think they're probably two of the worst offenses in the league. And two teams that invested first-round picks in the 2021 draft, and it hasn't worked out with Mac Jones, it hasn't worked out with Zach Wilson, and both of those guys will probably be elsewhere next year. So, yeah, there are a lot of similarities between the two teams. I mean, the Patriots, obviously a winning tradition, a championship tradition. The Jets have nothing of the sort. So the Jets, I think this is their fourth straight season with double-digit losses. So they are in the worst down period in their franchise's history, which is saying something. And they are just – they believe Aaron Rodgers being healthy next year is going to change everything. It's an awful lot to put on one player, especially a 40-year-old player, but they're putting everything on him to try to save the season in 2024.
You know, I saw this – it was pinned on your on your Twitter account, but I guess I didn't realize it until I actually glanced through it, that Joe Namath is 80. And I know he turned 80 earlier this fall, but he's 80 years old? That just blew me away.
Yeah, he turned 80 in May, actually. So, it's hard to believe. And it's been 55 years since the Jets won the Super Bowl, and they haven't been back since then, so it's a really long drought. I mean, it's 13 years out of the playoffs, which is the longest current drought among any sports team in the four major sports.
Yeah.
So it's like I said, these are dark times for the Jets.
Okay, and not exactly great, bright times for the Patriots either. So
yeah, it's going to be a surreal atmosphere. On Sunday, I don't know what to expect. I mean, you could have a somewhat historic day. It could be Belichick's last game.
Mm-hmm.
Two teams playing out the string. I don't think we're going to see a lot of touchdowns, if any. We could see like a 9-6 type of game, which would probably be a fitting way for these two teams to end the season.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I'm crying inside. But, okay, I guess I certainly can – can understand that a little bit. Rich, thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Best guess, which team sets itself up in better shape going forward? And do the Patriots need to solve their coaching conundrum before you can actually make a guess on that going into next year, the Patriots or the Jets, based on what you know right today?
I think the Jets are in a better position than the Patriots. Just simply, and I'm not even taking into account. I would say that even if Belichick does come back,
mm-hmm.
The Jets know who their quarterback is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Rodgers is healthy. He could probably play now if he had to. So, a healthy quarterback and a really good defense and some really good a couple of good offensive skill players. I think the Jets are probably further along than the Patriots in terms of getting back into contention.
And yet, I'm just, again, curious here. Does anybody care the fact that they've lost 15 straight to the Patriots? And was there any talk about that this week?
They were kind of downplaying that, but we'll see. I'm going to go in the locker room in a few minutes and check it out. But none of these Jets have been here for, I think, Quentin Williams has been here the longest, and he came in, 2018 or mm-hmm. 2019? Mm-hmm. So, no one in the Jet locker room has ever beaten the Patriots, which is really hard to believe. But it goes back, like you said, 15 games. It's the longest active head-to-head streak in the league right now. So, for some of the older guys like a Quentin Williams, who's not really that old, but guys who've been here for a few – and I'm sure Salah wants it too.
Mm-hmm.
Salah's 0-5 against Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his rear end handed to him a few times, a couple of blowouts there. And I'm sure he was asked about it today, and he completely downplayed that particular storyline. Mm-hmm. He says, basically, it's just another game,
yeah.
Which I don't believe exactly.
Yeah, I think I find that hard to believe as well. But another, yeah. What else would you expect him to say, right? So I get that.
And I'm sure Belichick wants it badly, too.
Just, sure.
You know, look, we know his disdain for the Jets over the years. He's would like nothing more to stick it to them, and and just if it is the end for him, go out on a high note.
Yeah, let's see. That's what we need. We need some angst. We need something to grind and gnash our teeth over. Maybe that can be enough. I don't know. It probably won't be. But.
Well, that'll take a lot of manufacturing this week because you know, the two teams are dead in the water. But right. We'll see what we can do.
Right. What do you think we're doing here, right? We're trying to manufacture
it. Exactly.
All right. Rich, thank you for spending some time. Really appreciate it. And safe travels to you, my friend.
All right. Thank you so much.
You
take
got
care.
It. All right. Rich Cimini, who you can get him at Rich Cimini, C-I-M-I-N-I. On Twitter, on X, and you know, he said he's getting ready to go in the locker room and ask the guys themselves, hey, you know, the fact that you've lost 15 straight with the Patriots, does that, you know, upset you? Going to ask them that. And they're going to say, what do you think they're going to say? Oh, no, it's just another game. When deep down, it's going to be like, what? Are you kidding me? I want to knock the snot out of those guys. If you're any kind of a competitor, that's what you want to do. You want to knock the snot out of somebody. You finally want to stand up to the bully, right? And the Patriots have done nothing but bully the Jets for the last, you know, almost 8 years now. And, you know, I realize that some of you are probably going, oh, don't jinx it, don't jinx it. How many, though, really think that? Because I would tell you that, you know, there are more people who I've seen in the last 32 years that I've been doing what I've been doing with the Patriots. There are more people in the last 3 or 4 weeks rooting against the Patriots so they can get a better draft pick than I've ever seen in my entire career. Now, I've opined about this, talked about it on this show, written about it. There's no such thing as tanking, okay? There's just not. It doesn't exist. I can tell you this because I've been in these locker rooms, and, yeah, I wasn't ever in an NFL huddle, but even being in huddles, there's nobody who stands across from someone and is willingly absorbing punishment, physical, if not mental punishment, from the guy that lines up across you. But you know you have to take that punishment in order for the betterment of the team to succeed. There's nobody in their right mind who is going to lay down. If you think that they would actually lay down in an effort to move up a spot or two, to get one or two draft picks better, again, I would argue you have never, ever been in a huddle that matters. I would argue that you've never been on a team because you're just wrong. And then add the physicality of the sport of football on top of that. No. Somebody hits me in the mouth, my first reaction is, I'm going to hit him back. This is where we get in trouble. Because, you know, guys who retaliate, you know, it's always the retaliatory blow that gets flagged by the official. It happens all the time. This is where you have to have presence of mind. You have to have poise under pressure. You have to have, you got to have, you know, you got to have the right mindset. And football players are trained differently, I think, than athletes in other sports because of the physical nature of the sport. I mean, you are in a car wreck. Your body is absorbing the same kind of punishment as if you were in a car accident, probably 50 to 60 times a game. If you're an every down kind of guy, how many times do you think you're getting beat up? How many times do you think, you know, that Mack truck is going to hit you head on? That type of impact. It happens. You suffer, you know, some of those linemen suffer whiplash on every play. Why do you think they have neck rolls? What do you think now they're going to start making those skull caps that you see, you know, in spring training and summer camp? Those are eventually going to be mandatory. You know that, right? We're heading that direction. We are definitely heading that direction. Because the sport is becoming too violent. where nobody's going to be around, and they want to lengthen the season. We're already at 17 games. We're going to go to 18. You know that, right? We are going to go to 18. How are we going to protect these guys? How are we going to have a sport left in another 20 years unless we do something now to start looking at the well-being and the future of some of these players? So I'm just saying the mental aspect of it is you're asking somebody to do the impossible. And the impossible is to, oh, yeah, I'll just give up here so our team can get a draft pick, a better draft slot, when we all know that the draft, as much as we all like to think we all know who the best guy is, oh, yeah, we got to go get Caleb Williams. Oh, yeah, we got to go get Drake May. Oh, what about Jaden Daniels? Okay, what about these guys, right? Well, didn't they say this just a few years ago about Zach Wilson? Look what happened to him. Mac Jones, oh, he's a steal at 15, right? Well, unfortunately, didn't quite work out, as, you know, Rich Cimini just kind of pointed out. The draft is a crapshoot, and so we're going to ask people to give up something that they know is an absolute in order to go roll the dice? What, are you nuts? It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. Now, it's fun to think about because it fits our agenda. You know, our agenda is, well, hey, if they lose, they're going to get a better draft pick. Well, duh, that's the rules of the game. But, you know, whether or not you're choosing one or three or five in this particular draft, I don't think it really matters. In fact, I heard today, one of the local shows here today was talking about how regardless of what happens on Sunday, Patriots can't do worse than the fifth pick. Even if they win and all the other tiebreakers and scenarios play out negatively for the Patriots, they cannot finish with worse than the number five pick. And I would say you're going to get somebody pretty good at number five. Now, are you going to get the guy you want? Well, who is the guy? Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels? Marvin Harrison? Oh, see, there's four right there, and they're going to pick fifth. Oh, they're going to get screwed. Man, I feel sorry for you if that's all you can think about. All four of them could end up being a flop. All four of them could end up being a flop. The point is that, look, you play what's in front of you. You play the game because football players play football. You play the game because that's what you're bred to do. And nobody in that locker room has ever thought about, you know, laying down on purpose in order to get a better draft pick. I can guarantee that. I never played at the pro level, but I've had plenty of friends who have. Okay? I've known guys who have played with torn ligaments, broken legs. Pete Brock, you know, my good friend Pete Brock, who was, of course, the Patriots center in Super Bowl XX. And Pete and I did college football together for a number of years, broadcasts. And I love the story that he tells about, you know, when he knew he had a broken leg playing center for the Patriots back in the mid-'80s. This was, it was the mid-'80s. This was, I think, right before the 86 Super Bowl. And he got undercut or got rolled up on, and it broke, you know, your shin bone, what the hell that is. I'm terribly bad at anatomy. But he knew he had something wrong. And John Hanna kept asking him, can you go another play? I need you one more. Can you go one more?
The tibia?
Yeah, the tibia, thank you. Okay, it was his tibia. And Hanna kept asking him in the huddle, can you go one more? Can you go one more? And before they knew it, it was like an 18-play, 80-yard drive, and they were in the end zone before he finally said, okay, Hog, that's it, I'm out. That's the nature. That's what these guys think. Okay? Guy's playing with a broken leg. He's not laying down for anybody. That's what happens. Pete tells the story much better than I do. But he's told that one before, and I'm like, no. And he's like, yeah. And he said, every time Hog is coming over, John Hanna is coming over and pulling me up out of the pile, he's like, can you go one more? You go one more? Need you, bud. Need you. We really need you. Can you go one more? He's like, all right, yeah, for you, Hog, I'll go one more. And before you knew it, they'd marched right down the field. and got into the end zone. That's the mentality you're going up against when you say, oh, yeah, they should tank. That ain't happening. That ain't happening. Mike Hadlick covers the Patriots for WEEI and WEEI.com. Kind enough to join us here in the playbook today. Hey, Mike, John Rook here in Foxborough. How you doing?
What's going on, John? I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, 100%. We've been meaning to do this all season long, but you know, finally we've been able to connect here at the end of the year. And I'm just wondering how you feel right now about this whole, you know, tankathon thing that's going on. And so many people think that the Patriots, you know, that there's something actually to this. And you probably heard at least some of my diatribe on that one. But
I did.
I'm just wondering how you feel about that and whether or not you really feel it's possible for professional football players to think anything differently other than smacking the guy in the head who's across from them on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I've been going at this a little while now with, you know, obviously with the position the Patriots are in and the idea of getting a higher draft pick. And it's obviously better long term for this team to pick higher than lower. That's the nature of the business.
Right.
And I agree that it can be a crapshoot as to whether or not a player is good or bad. And there are a ton of draft busts. But if as a franchise you have a higher pick, you get your better choice. But ultimately, it's impossible to tank in professional football. You cannot ask guys to not play. You can't ask guys to pull up on tackles. You can't tank your play calling. You can't run the ball 75. That's just, it's not going to happen from a coaching perspective, and it's not going to happen from a player's perspective. There's too much money on the line. These guys' pride is on the line. Guys are still playing for contract extensions, and guys are going into free agency. So if they can play and they put better tape on the field, then that gives them a better chance to make more money down the line. So a team, the Patriots themselves this week, are not going to tank and try to lose. There will never be that attitude in a locker room. But ultimately, is it better, you know, for them long term if they lose on Sunday? Yes, but there's no way to calculate that. Bill Belichick right now might not even know if he's back next year, so he has no reason to tank. It's not going to happen. It doesn't happen in the game of football.
You know, funny you should mention Bill, because I'm looking at Twitter right now, and three of the four names that are trending: Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, Trent Brown.
Yep.
That's
about right, John. That's where we're at right now with this team, that's for sure.
Yeah. Let me ask you your thoughts on Belichick first, only because that seems to be, you know, where a lot of mindset is today, that, you know, this very well could be Coach Belichick's final game as head coach of the Patriots this Sunday, and which would be remarkable. That's why I kind of opened the show today thinking, hey, is this the end of an era? Should it be the end of an era? Based on reading the tea leaves and you're covering the team this year, what do you think is liable to be the situation 1 week from today?
Man, it's I've gone, you know, back and forth on this a lot over the last, you know, couple weeks. There's been a bunch of reporting inside and outside of the building that, you know, on one hand, the Crafts haven't made a decision and they're going to play it through. On the other hand, someone, Tom Curran, I believe, mentioned that a decision was made when they lost in Germany. Mm-hmm. So it's tough to say right now. I think that ultimately Bill will speak with Robert and Jonathan after the season, and that's when things will sort of get hashed out here. Do they have reason to move on from him? I think they do. I mean, a 4-12 season right now with one game to go, it's not at all what this ownership group projected. It's not what they went into the season hoping for. I know that Bill has obviously a resume of 20-plus years of great coaching, but it hasn't been great over the last four. So if they want to not look at the past and look forward to the future, I could see them moving on from him. But at the same time, you look at it and you go, well, he is the greatest coach of all time. And they were, you know, they were in some of these games down the stretch, and they were a missed field goal away, and they were, you know, maybe a hurt player away. And obviously Christian Gonzalez and Matthew Judon are out for the season. So, yep. Like, Bill's going to have a case when they ultimately have that, you know, have that conversation. Me personally, I think I would move on from him. I think you look at it, and we just talked about the draft, and you might have a top five pick and the chance to bring in, you know, a top tier quarterback prospect signal caller for this franchise. I don't think you can screw that up. And I just think that, you know, in this day and age, in the game of football and how things have translated, You want to have an offensive-minded head coach, a guy who can grow with your franchise quarterback, and not a defensive coach who has an offensive coordinator who grows with his quarterback for 3 years and then goes off to be a head coach, and then you start that whole cycle all over again. So, you know, looking at it, I think I would move on from him. What they will do obviously remains to be seen. Next week is probably going to be the biggest week we've seen since Tom Brady left New England around Foxborough.
I think your assessment's pretty fair, and I think there would be a lot of people that would agree with you. I think it's entirely probable that Tom Curran's original report has a lot of accuracy to it, that there was a decision made following the game in Germany. I'm just not certain that the decision is the one people think it was. That's where I find myself caught between the rock and the proverbial hard place, because I think it's possible.
I look at that.
Go ahead.
No, I look at that the report from Curran that, you know, you mentioned that a decision was made, and I think of it, and this is just, you know, my sort of point of view on it, is maybe the Kraft sat there and said, let's not make a decision, but let's not forget how we feel right now.
Yeah.
We're in Germany on an international stage, and we just got embarrassed by the Colts. Let's not forget this feeling when we do win 3 of our last 6 games down the stretch and things do start to turn a corner. And let's remember that, you know, this was a part of this season too, and let's not, you know, let emotion get the best of us, and let's make a logical decision down the stretch. So that's kind of why I think they pinpoint that game as something where a decision was made and this is how we feel at this moment in time.
Yeah. I'm led to believe that, you know, the longer this thing goes after the game is over on Sunday, that the more likely, I don't think anything will be status quo, but I think the more likely we'll see some carryover. In other words, maybe Bill sticks around. Maybe Bill decides, yeah, maybe I do need a little help in the personnel department. Maybe they've been cooking up something, you know, since October or even before in an effort to try to fix that. The problem is the lack of information that has you know, not been there for anybody. Bill has done a great job of deflecting it. The Krafts have not said anything. And that's kind of what we're all craving for, which is why really you hear some of these wild stories that are out there, because there's so much of a demand for something somewhere. And it sounds to me like, look, we got to know something. And I think once the season is over, we should know something. But the longer that it goes, and hey, I'll give you this one, because we just talked about this opening hour of the show today, something that nobody has touched on. Nobody has touched on this yet. But Tom Brady comes back for the Hall of Fame induction in June, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct. June 12th, I believe.
Okay, so he comes back on June the 12th. Is Bill Belichick the coach? And if he's not, do they invite him back?
So I haven't written or talked about it, you know, publicly, but I've thought about this a little bit too over the last couple of weeks with Brady coming back. So it's funny you mention that. And whether he's the coach or not, I find it very hard to believe that he can not show up to the Tom Brady ceremony. I mean, when Brady came back here, again, when he was with the Buccaneers a few seasons ago, and then this past year when he came back for his Thank You Tom game that they did week one, Belichick, you know, spoke very highly of Brady. And it was something that we didn't see, obviously, when Brady was here, and it was even something we haven't seen, you know, outside of those 2 weeks. So,
right.
You know, deep down that, you know, Bill has this profound respect for Tom and what he did for the franchise and what he did for as a coach. So it would be a massive, I think, you know, slap in the face to the franchise and Tom if Bill didn't show up.
Right.
I find it very hard to believe that even if things get ugly down the stretch these next couple weeks and they do want to move on and things, you know, don't go well during that meeting, I still think Bill knows at the end of the day, you know, maybe even after 6 months of calming down after what happened, he would show up here for Brady's retirement ceremony.
I mean, yeah, I'd like to think that would be the case, but I got to tell you, look, we're all human, and, you know, when it comes to, you know, a boss and someone who lets you go, that's not exactly the first person you want to please 6 months or 6 years on down the line. You know what I'm saying? I never thought of that, and if they really want to sell the stadium out or do whatever they're going to do for, you know, for Tom's ceremony, I'm just wondering if Bill somehow isn't a part of that. Maybe this is part of their negotiation. I don't know. It could be. I think all things have
now
to be on the table here.
I look at June 12th, right? And it's I don't know exactly. I can't remember the timeline off the top of my head from this past season, but that might be around, like, or close to OTA periods.
Correct.
Some mini camps. So
correct, yes.
If he's elsewhere, he could easily use a, oh, well, I'm in L.A. or I'm in Washington and I can't make the trip up because we have X, Y, and Z today and I just couldn't make it, sorry. So that could be an easy little built-in excuse for him, too, depending on what the off-season schedule looks like for his team.
Something to consider. You're 100% right. By the way, just out of curiosity, you mentioned, you know, those teams as, you know, potential landing spots. If he does coach somewhere other than New England, what's the most likely landing spot, do you think?
I've gone between the Chargers and the Commanders. I think Washington makes a lot of sense because it's close to where he grew up. Still on the East Coast, so he's not going too far from family. They don't have to jump complete ship and go across the country. I would assume that he's going to take Steve and Brian Belichick on him with his staff, so they won't have to, you know, move too far either. But at the end of the day, I still think the most ready-made roster for him to go win ASAP, because again, as much as he's going to go and want to, you know, maybe find some newfound, a new jolt, if you will, coaching somewhere else, he's really probably only got 5-6 years max. I mean, the guy is 72, so he's not going to stick around for too long wherever he goes. So the most ready-made roster, I think, although they are in a bit of a salary cap situation, is the Chargers. I mean, you already have a franchise quarterback in Justin Herbert. You have talent on that side of the ball and Mike Williams and Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler. And again, it sort of reminds me of what Brady did in Tampa. He goes to the most ready-made place where he can step in, add his value. Tampa needed a quarterback in Brady. LA needs a coach in Belichick and a guy who, you know, can be a GM. And as much as it hasn't worked out here, it could maybe work out somewhere else for a year or two. So I think ultimately Chargers or Commanders are the two places that make the most sense for Belichick if he moves on.
Let me just throw another fly in that ointment. Should the Dallas Cowboys flop in the postseason, I could see Dallas.
I agree. I'm with you there, too. That's another one, again, if they do, like you mentioned, John, flop in the postseason like they have, that's another team who's probably a coach away.
Yeah.
They have Dak Prescott. They have a ready-made defense. They have weapons on offense.
Yep.
You can bring in Bill Belichick there. That's a perfect place for him as well.
Yeah. You know, again, as long as we're scatter shooting here, that would be one potential target. How far away are the Patriots at the stage of the game? You know, this weekend's game aside, how far away is this team, in your estimation, from, you know, getting itself back into contention, taking into consideration, again, the close games that they did have this year and the absolute ineptitude that they've had on offense much of this year? Is there enough in certain parts that they could legitimately build and contend next year?
Their defense is a playoff defense right now, today. Mm-hmm. They're a top five in a majority of categories. They have one of the best run defenses in football.
Right.
Their pass defense, when healthy, you know, you bring back Christian Gonzalez and Marcus Jones, and you know, you sort of retooled the cornerback room a bit, but their defense is ready made to make a postseason run. The offense, however, is obviously, like you mentioned, a different story. They're going to need a quarterback. They need weapons. You need a number one wide receiver. You need some tackles. So, look, as far as being, and you can do that all in one offseason. You can bring in a Caleb Williams, a Drake May, a Michael Penix, whoever you draft, Jaden Daniels, right?
Yep.
Or you could go get a veteran in Baker Mayfield, and who has had some success in Tampa, or Kirk Cousins, if you will. Like, there's quarterback options out there, right? But then you got to go get your number one wide receiver, and you do that in the draft. You do that through free agency. That remains to be seen. And then obviously you need some bookend tackles there, with Trent Brown likely gone, and, you know, Mike Onwenu being a free agent. So the rebuilding basically all comes on the offensive side of the ball. And then you bring in your talent, but then you kind of got to mesh it all together. You need, whether it's going to be Bill O'Brien calling the offense or somebody else, you then need to get chemistry down and, you know, get your playbook right and your offense correct. And so that might take some time too. So if you want to go quick rebuild, I can see it happening in 1 to 2 years. But really at that point, then you go 2 years out and your defense needs some help too. So it's tough. It's not ideal, but they do have a few holes on offense that they can certainly patch up this offseason.
That's why I'm led to believe that I think whatever fix they end up going with is going to have to be a relatively quick fix, because of you, what you just mentioned, fact is that this defense is going to miss out on a window of opportunity here. They've got to figure out a way to beef up the offense, see if they can't get a title-contending type of team with a playoff-ready defense already, and that's why this is all going to be offensively, I think we're all going to be offensively challenged, I think, before all is said and done between now and next August.
Yeah, and that's a great point because, like, it sounds like, okay, it's better because it's a better way to rebuild because you already have the defense.
But yeah.
Then by the time you rebuild the offense, then the defense could be messed up, and it's almost like it's better off to just bottom out on both sides and rebuild them all at once.
So, right.
It'll be fascinating to see how they ultimately do it.
What do you think, Mike, is really at stake this Sunday against the Jets? I mean, you know, I mentioned a little bit earlier to Rich Cimini of ESPN that, you know, I'm wondering if anybody in the Jets even cares that they've lost 15 in a row to the Patriots, which is certainly the one thing that, you know, most people on the outside are going to look at for this game, other than the fact that it could be Bill's last game as a head coach. I mean, does that matter to anybody, do you think?
I mean, I look at it as potentially Bill's last game and then potentially Matthew Slater's last game, a guy who's been here for a long time and has talked a lot about, you know, considering retirement. So I guess that's what's on the line as far as a Patriots, you know, perspective, but like winning or losing, I guess on one hand, it's good to go out on top if it is their last game, but at the end of the day, they're out of the postseason. So, I mean, it could be ceremonial. It's going to be something that a lot of people have eyes on because of the fact that Belichick and Slater could be gone.
Mm-hmm.
But really what it comes down to the most, I think it's the draft pick and it's the bottoming out and losing the game. And they're not going to lose on purpose, but fans and media and, you know, pundits around the league are going to be scoreboard watching, or, you know, throughout the entire afternoon to see where the Patriots, where the Commanders, where, you know, the Arizona Cardinals land on the scoreboard and, you know, see how this whole thing plays out by the end of Sunday. So
yeah.
I think that's really what, you know, what matters to fans right now could be the draft position, honestly.
Yeah, of course, the draft position, which, of course, is a crapshoot in and of itself. So, you know,
right.
That's why the whole tanking thing just it's utter nonsense, you know, because, hey, I mean, a couple of years ago, we thought that a guy like Zach Wilson's going to be really good in New York, right? And he won't be suited up for the Jets this weekend. Thought that Mac Jones might end up playing out okay, too, you know, especially after his first year here in New England.
Yeah, another interesting thing from that, too, is you look at the Houston Texans last year who – were vying for the number one pick and wanted the number one pick, and they win week 18. They fall to number two, and then they land C.J. Stroud, who is their franchise quarterback right now, and they're, you know, they could make the postseason as soon as this year if they win on Sunday, where you look at Carolina, who had the number one pick, and they have Bryce Young, who hasn't been up to snuff with them as far as quarterback either. So it really is. It is a crapshoot, and you can look at preseason and rankings all you want, but at the end of the day, you don't really know until after they get in your building.
No, you don't. That's very true. Hey, Mike, thanks for spending a little time. Really appreciate it. I look forward to doing it again.
Hey, you got it, John. Thanks for having me. We'll talk soon.
You bet. Mike Kadlick, at Mike Kadlick, Kadlick, where you find him on X.com. And follow his tweets there, covering the Patriots for WEEI and WEEI.com. Yeah, see, it's still trending. Look on X. Robert Kraft, Belichick. 1-2 right there. Patriots fans, if you want to see Toyota's best offers, including those not seen on TV, go to buyatoyota.com. It's Toyota's official website for deals from the official vehicle of the New England Patriots. Toyota, let's go places. And Bridgestone, the official tire of the New England Patriots, proud to partner with Sullivan Tire, New England's headquarters for quality Bridgestone tires. Visit sullivantire.com to find a location near you.
A real woman could stop you from drinking.
It has to be a real big woman.
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter.
Now on, your name is Flounder.
On Patriots Playbook.
Flounder.
Good afternoon, Flounder.
Somehow the word flounder epitomizes the Patriots 2023 season.
Yeah, that's actually that's one adjective I don't think I've actually put the Patriots to this year as flounder, but that's actually true. That's actually true. So
their most losses in 31 years,
which is remarkable when you think about it. 31. That's right. Since is
92.
Yeah, since so in 92 that was that Dick McPherson?
Oh. 92. Well, what I know it wasn't Rod Rust.
No, because Rod Rust was 90. And they were
one in 15.
I know because I've said that to this audience before. I was the only one that was willing to do Rod Rust coach's show. During a 1-15 season.
Well, 2-14 led to Drew Bledsoe being the number one overall pick.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So
but, I mean, forgettable year, and it's somehow ironic that they're ending with the team that they own. And we'll see if they own them one more time on Sunday.
Yeah, and to that end, I guess the other bit of irony here that we really haven't pointed out, although it far be it from us to miss an opportunity to point out the obvious, is that Bill Belichick's career in New England could start, in New England could come about from the team that he actually jilted at the altar to come to New England in the first place.
Yes, that's very, very true. How long was he coach? About 3 hours? Or?
Roughly. Roughly.
About the length of a football game.
Yeah.
And, it all turned out well, obviously, and who knows what's going to happen over the next couple of days. I haven't seen Black Friday, or Black Monday, I should say, hashtag yet, which I'm sure is coming.
Yep.
Because we usually have 6 or 7, maybe 8 dismissals. We've already had a bunch during the season,
mm-hmm.
but we'll see. Who knows? I mean, I give the Pats credit; they gave the Bills a fight last week. All those turnovers in the first half—they basically knocked Denver out of the playoffs. If you really think about it,
mm-hmm.
They could wind up knocking Pittsburgh out of the playoffs if Pittsburgh doesn't take care of business. And it just goes to show you. And I caught the tail end of your conversation. What was the young man you were talking to?
Mike Cadlick, who covers the Patriots for EEI.
I'm not with him, but boy, did he impress me in 3 minutes.
Good. That's good.
Just really sound observation. The whole tanking thing and losing. And the fact that he brought up the Texans, which I thought was such a great point, because if you remember, John, they got so much heat last year for winning that final game.
Yeah.
And all you heard from so many people in our profession was, they ruined it, they screwed up. They screwed up by winning. Yeah, they really screwed up, didn't they?
Yeah.
They really screwed up. And kudos to them, because not only did they get C.J. Stroud, they were so aggressive during the draft that they traded with Arizona and got Will Anderson with the 3rd overall pick. And they have tripled their win total from a year ago and could be in the playoffs.
Which is kind of where I was leading Mike. I was wondering if he thought that the Patriots have enough right now to where they could pull a feat such as the Texans pulled and become playoff worthy next year.
Well, listen, never say never in this league. As we pointed out last year, 4 teams that finished last in 2021 – went to the playoffs in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget the Cleveland Browns were a last place team last year. How are they doing?
Yeah, I'd say that they're doing pretty well. They're 11-5.
Right. And the Texans could be another last place team that makes the playoffs. We're not going to have as many as we did last year. I mean, Washington has really hit the skids. Atlanta's really kind of, teased us for most of the year and so on. I will give the Bears credit. I think the Bears have been tremendous. They're 7-5 in their last 12 games after being 0-4. They've doubled their win total from last year. So, and it's not just because you have a high draft choice. It's because a lot of things change. And it's not because of soft schedules. And I see that all the time with the soft schedule thing. Not a soft schedule thing. It's not like when we had real last-place schedules. You remember that, John, and we had a couple divisions. Most of the divisions had 5 teams, four.
Mm-hmm.
And they created a system where the 2 fifth-place teams played each other in a home-and-home, which obviously you don't have that anymore.
Right.
But that just shows you the topsy-turvy nature of this league. And by the way, kudos to the Arizona Cardinals. Is there any truth to the rumor that they're going to relocate to the state of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, right.
They beat the Steelers and the Eagles on the road this year.
Pretty good.
And we're down 21-6 last week for a team that really had nothing to play for.
Right. Right.
Kudos.
And for a brief spell there, I know there were a lot of Cardinal fans in New England country as well, because I think for a fleeting moment, the Patriots, I think, were in line for the number two pick. So I'm like, wow, that was a shocking a turn of events. And that just sort of underscores the whole, you know, tanking thing. You know, these guys don't do that. And for anybody to think that they should do that, you're not dealing in reality.
Well, I'll sum it up this way. You have to be a real loser to root for losing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, let's face it. That's really the truth. By the way, topsy-turvy, Bengals were what, a Super Bowl team a year ago?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. All right, yeah, right, 2 years ago. Last place this year.
Yes. Oh, and you know what? I was just writing about that. It's one of my key statistics for the week, shameless plug.
Yeah.
Which will be out later today. How's this, John? If the Bengals win on Sunday, every team in the AFC North will finish with a winning record.
That's amazing.
That's not only amazing, it would be the first time it's happened since the merger.
Wow. Wow. And frankly, I thought that the NFC East or the AFC East would be the first division to do that, especially before this year started. And to think that it could be, you know, wow, the Browns, the Bengals, good grief. That's a shocker.
Well, nine times previously, including last year, we've had divisions, even five-team divisions, where no one had a losing record. But we've never had a season where all four teams in the division or five teams in division were above 500.
Mm.
So, and by the way, this will be interesting. It's another battle of the backups, okay? Apparently, according to Adam Schefter, Jeff Driscoll is going to be the Browns' starting quarterback this
week. Wow, no kidding.
He would be the fifth different starting quarterback, ironically, for a team that's going to be the number five seed in the AFC playoffs.
That's one of the stories of the year right there. Five quarterbacks for the Browns.
Comeback player of the year for playing about a month, but mm-hmm. Joe Flacco seems to be in line for it.
Yeah, I would think so, just because of the headlines that have happened and the way that the Browns have played, you know, since he got up off his couch to come play again.
Well, you know what's funny about them is, listen, their defense has given up the fewest yards in the league this year, fewest passing yards in the league. Sometimes they look very ordinary on defense, but they still have a lot of playmakers. But, you know, it's not like Joe Flacco has come in here and thrown a bunch of touchdown passes without interceptions. He's been, you know, he's just, it's like watching an intramural football team, the Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
John, they turned over the ball 35 times this year.
That's a lot.
And still have an 11-5 record.
Mm-hmm.
It's what, there's like almost like this devil-may-care attitude to them and so on. And I think it served them pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Russell, let's take a quick look, if we can, going into the last week here, because I know this is how the NFL kind of lined it up. We've got, you know, divisional battles here because they wanted to, you know, yeah, try to bring things out as, you know, right down to the very end. I can't say that I argue or can complain about that philosophy. They want meaningful football. And there are 20 teams, at least at my count, that have a shot of getting into the Super Bowl in the last week of the season. And I think that hasn't happened in like almost 40 years, over 40 years maybe. And I know that you can probably correct me on that one. But that just, you know, the fact is that there's a lot of teams still involved. Unfortunately, it's just not the one that a lot of fans around here wish were involved.
Absolutely. Well, you know, listen, we're now, I believe, in the third season of the 17 games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I believe this is now the fourth season where we have 14 playoff teams
mm-hmm.
instead of 12.
Mm-hmm.
So that obviously changes things as well. And again, we've seen we mentioned the four last place teams in 2021 to make the playoffs in 2022. John, there were three last place teams in 2020 that made the playoffs in 2021.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's not a recent trend. It's been a very recent trend, this revival of going from last to first and so on. Hell, when the Eagles won the Super Bowl back in 2017, they were in last place the year before.
Mm-hmm.
And they went from 7-9 and won the whole thing. So that's, again, what New England did, what Kansas City to a good group. And Kansas City's now won 8 division titles in a row. That's one of the longest streaks in NFL history. But those are the anomalies. And we shall see. I mean, we have 2 number one seeds that are totally different from a year ago. It's San Francisco and Baltimore. Last year was Philadelphia and Kansas City. They both got in. We'll see if it serves them well and so on. But this last week of the season is always fascinating to me because with teams clinching, who are they going to play?
Right.
Who are they not going to play? Especially San Francisco and Baltimore. Do you take the risk of not playing at all and being rusty in a couple of weeks? I even heard John Harbaugh kind of talking about it from 4 years ago. You'll remember the Ravens were the number one seed in the playoffs. And after Derrick Henry got done running all over the Patriots in the playoffs, he came down to Baltimore and ran all over them. So I just find it very, very interesting how this plays out. Who's going to rep? I mean, we're seeing the Rams are going to start Carson Wentz this week. They're a third different quarterback. How these teams that are getting, and I understand the Rams, they're going to be a wild card, so we'll see them right away. But who gets in? Who gets left out? The pressure of a winning in can sometimes be a little over, even though you're playing at home. I'm watching the Packers this week. If they win and they're in, but the Bears are very improved. Saturday, mm-hmm. with Houston and Indianapolis. Okay, mm-hmm. both of those teams have had remarkable seasons. But those teams, think about this, John: the Colts and the Texans combined to win 7 games this year. Last year, combined,
right? right.
And they're both 9-7.
9-7 this year, right? And playing for something meaningful this week. That's right. Absolutely. I was just going to ask, Russell, of the teams that look to be in position to play their way in, or let's say they've already clinched, they're already in, of the teams, which teams really do you think should be worried about where they are at present? I don't know that there's a whole lot of worry over the Ravens, let's say, for instance, but maybe there's a little worry in Philadelphia. Maybe there's a little worry, I don't know, about the Jaguars. Maybe there's, a little worry, someplace else. What do you feel like is the scenario here, and what does history tell us in terms of playing well at the end of the year to use as a springboard into the postseason?
Well, I think Philadelphia has really been kind of in a funk for about a month and a half. They're 1-4 in their last 5 games. And think about that Christmas game against the Giants. They're up 20-3, and then in the heartbeat, they're up 20-18.
Mm-hmm.
They collapsed in the second half. Last week against the Cardinals, they gave up what? A bunch of touchdowns in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
They had to collapse in the final couple minutes against Seattle. They got blown out by. I'd be very worried for your Philadelphia because last year you hung the fact that you could rush the passer, and your defense was pretty respectable. So that we don't really see that this year. So that to me is very, very surprising of how. And I know they've had coordinator changes and all that stuff. But I've been stunned about watching. And I know they won a lot of close games early in the season. And to me, that's obviously can be a positive. But, they've kind of been stagnant now for about 6 weeks. And I know they're in the playoffs, and they've gone from a team that looked like it was going to win the division. Now, if Dallas wins the NFC East, which, by the way, will keep alive a very long streak in the league, which is no team has repeated the NFC East since the Eagles did it 4 years in a row from 2001 to 2004. It'd be almost 20 years.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, and, of course, we've got also have the battle for AFC East supremacy this weekend, how it's played out because of Miami coming back to the pack and then Buffalo, going from 500 to where they're now 10-6.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, and it'll be interesting to see if Miami can hold on and win the division. They haven't won the East, by the way, since 2008.
I was just about to say. I think it was Tom Brady's knee injury year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, they were both 11-5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But including the playoffs, since the Bills have had Josh Allen as their quarterback, I want to say they're 10-2 against the Dolphins, including they 48-20 this year. So we shall see how this all plays out.
Sure.
It'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out, because it's Miami. They still have a little residue from that. I mean, they got their you-know-what kicked, their fins kicked,
yeah,
their tail kicked by Baltimore. And, Baltimore with 8 offensive touchdowns this past week. Mm-hmm. And Baltimore had a hell of a – in the 7-day stretch, they scored, what, 89 points?
Yeah.
And beat San Francisco and Miami. That's a good week.
Yeah, it's a very good week. We'd be remiss, though, if we didn't at least touch for a moment on the Jets and Patriots. There's not really a whole lot of tremendous significance to the game other than in a historical perspective. Number one, Jets have a 15-game losing streak to the Patriots. Number two, and probably number one to fans around here, it could be Bill Belichick's last game as a head coach if he does decide to move on, or if the Patriots decide that for him. How do we view this game, and how should we view this game, especially from a historical perspective? Is that enough to kind of sink your teeth into, or are either of these teams, do you feel like close enough to where maybe this time next year they're one of those that are talking about seeding rather than going home?
Well, listen, the Jets season turned 4 plays into the year when
right.
Aaron Rodgers got down, so it's a woulda, coulda, shoulda. For them, New England, unfortunately, just had different problems this year opposed to last year. Last year, their defense was good. Their defense was very opportunistic. Losing Matt Judon and Christian Gonzalez early in the season, I thought, was a terrible blow for them, but losing both of them. And, here's what's remarkable. New England has given up the second fewest rushing yards in the league. They're 6th in total defense in terms of yards allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they are minus 10 in turnover differential,
yep.
which has never been, they have always been a good team in that area when Brady was there especially. So it's been a topsy-turvy season for them, and the things they've been able to do over the last couple of years have really come back to bite them. You can't turn over the ball 4 times in 1 half like
no.
they did last week.
Right.
And they still only wind up losing by 6.
Right.
So, it's weird. We'll go back to 1992 in a sense. Sometimes you have, one aspect of your team that is so good, and yet the rest of it just doesn't work that way. And I know this is more of a player thing than it is a team thing. But in 1992, the other team that finished 2-14, John, besides the Patriots, were the Seattle Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
They set a record for a 16-game season by scoring, 140 points.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, here's the rub. On a 2-14 team, Torquez Kennedy was the NFL Defensive Player of the Year.
That's crazy. I mean, you wouldn't think that, right? But
no.
That's nuts.
No, but that's what, in some ways, this is what this year's Patriots remind me of. They've had a defense that has probably deserved a better fate.
No question. No question.
And, besides injuries and the offensive issues and the turnover issues and so on, it just hasn't bounced their way this year. And yet, again, they beat Buffalo. On probably their best performance of the year, the comeback win up in Foxborough. So they've lost their share of close games. They've also got manhandled by the Cowboys, by the Saints, et cetera. So it's been a year or two that it's almost mystifying,
right?
Because it's not like they have just continuously lost nail biters. They've laid, like I used to say, they've laid some eggs, and in some instances, they've laid a frittata.
Yeah, that's right. Scrambled egg. Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Do you think this is Bill's last weekend to coach the Patriots? Just on a personal note, based on what you've noticed and what you've kind of looked at from afar.
I really have a tough time thinking this is just how it's all going to end. Okay.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not the owner, and I don't know what's been decided. And you know, it's been kind of out there that you know fate has already it's already been determined, and so on. So I don't know. I'm not that close to the situation.
Sure, I get it.
Writers and all that stuff, and so on.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this: I would hope it would not end like this. I would hope it would not end like. In a different sense, because with an ownership change, how Tom Landry's run in Dallas ended.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought he deserved a little more respect than was given. Okay, and I know that 88 team was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I understood what Jerry Jones and you know Jerry Jones was doing in the long run, but it was still kind of like, how do you kick a? First off, the kind of man that Tom Landry was. I had a chance to meet him at the Hall of Fame one year.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of coach he was to be just kicked to the curb like that. Mm-hmm. And I know it's real business, but, you know, when you have 20 straight winning seasons, you must – and, you know, went to, what, 5 Super Bowls, 1 or 2 of them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's in Canton for a reason. And I just didn't think it was handled well, and I'm hoping whenever this takes, you know – whenever this takes place, whenever there's a change, if there's not a change, I think I know it's 3 losing seasons in 4 years, but I think he deserves more benefit of the doubt. I would hate to see it end with a thud.
Yeah, yeah, and I would concur on that one. Hey, Russell, thanks. We'll try to wrap up the put a bow around this thing this time next week, shall we? And talk about some playoff football and.
I always enjoy rapping with you.
I knew you would. I appreciate that. And happy new year to you, my friend. And, yeah, we'll do this again at least one more before we sail off into the sunset for the season.
Sounds good. And just as a bonus for all the listeners, next week I will have all the playoffs figured out.
You mean you'll actually have it figured out by then?
But I'll just wait for the email on Sunday night.
Yeah, I think it might be wise if we all did that, right? Okay. Thanks, Russell. Appreciate you, bud.
All right, talk to you soon.
You got it. The one and only at Bax Football Guru on Twitter. You know, it's officially 2024, as you know. And if one of your resolutions is to get your home in tip-top shape, check out Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has a huge selection of multifunctional furniture, from storage beds to expandable dining to sleeper sofas, so every room does double duty and stays stylish. All right, talk about going for the extra point. Get your home organized for less at Bob's, the official furniture store of the New England Patriots. Our thanks to Russell Baxter, Mike Cadlick from WEEI.com. Who the hell else did we talk to? Oh, I'm absolutely, I can't see me. Rich Cimini from the New York Jets, ESPN.com, New York Jets reporter. Thank you, Rich. To try to get a little bit of insight on this, because it could be an historical day on Sunday in more ways than one. I think we all know what the obvious one is. But one way or another, we'll be here next week to talk about it. I think we're going to try to move to a little different start time for next week, however, because I know PU won't be on Wednesdays as we hit the off season. So we'll wrap up the regular season next Wednesday at noon Eastern time. Is that a plan? Sounds like a plan to me. We'll be here for at least one more regular season edition of the Playbook next week at noon on Wednesday. We'll talk to you then.
Thank you for downloading this podcast. Subscribe on Apple, Google Play, and everywhere else you listen. Like the show? Please rate and review us. Listener comments and ratings help keep us high in the podcast rankings so new listeners can find us. Be sure to check Patriots.com for more news and more podcasts.